questions that could reveal your purpose in life? What if there were questions that could surface the change most meaningful to you? And what if answering those questions would give you the power to ignite? Welcome to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. These are big conversations that lead to self-discovery. Together, let's embark on the leader's journey and ignite meaningful change. Realizing a vision of meaningful change takes a lot. There will be resistance both from those who are benefiting from what is now and from those who would prefer to hang on to the familiar, even when they know it's not ideal. So why would anyone be willing to do the hard work of leading the way to realizing a vision? In this episode, this leader questions whether it's going to be worth the effort. Please pose the question on the next Amplify card, Jonathan.
What difference would it make to your world? In what ways will your world feel the impact of this significant change?
Such a personal question. Even if I imagine myself being faced with it, personal.
Intimately personal. Because it is your world.
Which really speaks to that path to death.
Oh,
lovely. We're back at death.
It really does, yeah. Really does.
What difference would it make to your world? Yeah. It's difficult to look back on everything we've discussed, not just over the last few hours, but the last week now, almost. And not feel this would change a lot in my own life. Understatement.
Can I just say the tone of your voice went so low when you said, in my own life. That's nice.
We all have an inner Elvis somewhere, I think. I'm going to come back to the idea of integrity. And wholeness, and we're not a million miles away, Catherine, from what you were just saying about this. Again, this very necessary idea, the image of the line, the path. It's a path, isn't it? Really, it's more than a line.
Yes,
it's actually a path between where we stand today and then the moment of our own death, wherever that is. We don't know where that's going to be, but it's the commitment to follow that path. And the different the intolerance that we've talked about there, the need to let go of other choices, other paths, and stick with this one. I first sense here the sense of integrity. And because, as we were discussing in the previous conversation, because this isn't some instantaneous eureka moment in my life where I've suddenly stumbled on these ideas or this truth has been suddenly been revealed to me. That's not what we're talking about here. It's something that has revolved around inside me for a certain amount of time, that inner conversation around these different values and how it and what it means for Europe as my context for all of these things. So it feels like a coming together of different strands, from the ideas themselves to the craft, my own language, my own relationship with language. And I talked about rediscovering the desire to to use language not to explore or create in the fictional sense, but actually the power of language is something that tries to convince other people, bring them along with you. So there's that. At a much more practical level, I know this is not the heart of the question here. It's not the heart of the matter. But I'm going to throw it in because somewhere it's part of this. Where I stand today in time and space, not this afternoon here in London, but in Copenhagen where I live now, and where at least for the last couple of years, Copenhagen for me has symbolized a moment of retreat, refuge, partly for practical reasons to write a book, the first draft of a book, a novel, but also to move away from a world that had become too much, to recognize one's own fatigue and the need to recharge, regenerate. So I think that this is part of it as well. So as I try to answer this question, you know, what difference would it make to your world? On that last point, this is not about, you know, questioning my living in Copenhagen, for example. But there is a difference in that image of moving back to the city, yeah, in that metaphorical sense, moving back into action, to take action. Writing is action. Writing a novel requires a lot of action. Imagination at the service of writing. But I see, you know, in what ways will your world feel the impact of this significant change? You know, if as you said, if this is a very personal question, this is what I'm searching for. You know, it is, I'm seeing it as, How would the texture of my day to day change?
And the content of your day to day.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. I mean, I have to. I have to see also a return of energy here. That I feel I need right now. How could you hold the idea of this vision without feeling the sense of energy required behind it? The two things go hand in hand. The way we've talked about energy, vision here, the way we've talked about the vision, what it means to me, just the talking through of it and the idea of it, all of it implies a huge amount of energy, a commitment. Particularly once that choice is made. Once you said to yourself, this is it, okay? This is the thing. This is much more than how you organize your time. I'm imagining it would feel as if we talked about perspective when Jean was with us. He talked a lot about perspective. That this would be one of the big differences in my world. I would sense a whole change of perspective. And perhaps the point here is, what's the meaning of Copenhagen here? What does it symbolize? it's perhaps for good reasons, being on the periphery. I've needed to be on the periphery for a while to recharge, and to have the time and space to do something which was very much away from the city, away from battle.
The city being Brussels.
Well, it was, but now, in the same way that I'm using Copenhagen as this symbolic idea, yeah, of a place of refuge. You know, Liz and I, my partner, we didn't have a plan. Yeah, we didn't have a plan, but I think I certainly realised quickly, having arrived there, that I did need to use this time as a time of refuge. And you know, I described the practical need of silence and isolation to write a book. That's all normal. There's nothing controversial there. But if the return to the city is something else, that then it's not Brussels. I think I said earlier in a previous conversation, I had a very strong sense at the time that my story was done there, yeah, for good reasons. And I struggled with that and still struggle with that, if only because I have so many friends there. So what are we revolving around here? What are we turning around? What difference would it make to your world? In what ways will your world feel the impact? It's integrity. I come back to the start. Integrity, in the sense that your life would feel the wholeness of a vision that is that represents. I think this is getting closer to it. It's. I don't see how anybody could hold a vision like this one and see it as something that they do confined to one part of the life. It's not all consuming. It's not all consuming in the sense that I strongly believe that even those people who are utterly, utterly devoted to a cause, you know, need the time to do other things. You know, the other things feed, give the person the energy to do whatever the cause is and to pursue that. So it's not about, you know, I don't like the idea that your vision would take over your life. That doesn't feel right. So it's that there is a centrality around this. Obviously the sense of purpose, obviously the energy that goes with it, obviously the sense of wholeness. I think this is what I was reaching for in the previous conversation, that you have arrived at a moment in your life when you are, just as the vision seeks to reconcile all these competing values, all these competing ideas of what the good life is, so too in your own life you finally feel reconciled and are ready to move forward with energy and purpose, to begin to make that vision real. Yeah, that's my first answer.
So the difference it would make would be for you to move forward with energy and purpose to make your vision real.
Mm. And I say that with the sense that it's necessary. I don't see how it could be otherwise.
Out of a scale of 1 to 100.
Mm. 101.
Okay, now I'll tell you the question. We'll know your answer. How much of your current life would you be willing to change? To have change.
Mm.
Genuinely. If you really look at it.
Mm.
Not about specifics, about this feeling of, okay, how big of a leap am I willing to take.
Mm.
101. Good to know.
He said that before he yeah. knew what he was committing to, didn't you, Jonathan?
I think that the difficult question here is, and I can feel myself working my way through this, is there's the very, very practical question of what difference would it make to your world? What difference does it make to your day? Yeah, what does your day look like? This is really bringing it down to routine, how you organize your time. Mm-hmm. And these are not small questions. These are important questions. And as you said, what part of my life now would you be willing to change or let go of? I mean, we're not there yet, are we? We're not yet in a conversation of how you would organize yourself Mm-mm. around this. I get that.
More about a gauge of willingness.
Yeah.
It's a wild question.
Mm.
And maybe an unreasonable one. But leadership is unreasonable.
Mm. Yeah.
And really, it's also a question of your relationship with familiarity.
Mm.
Is it a dependency? Can you survive without it? Can you thrive in something completely unfamiliar?
Yeah. This is it, isn't it?
It's funny because I chastise myself with my answer. I have a number that is quite high.
Mm-hmm.
My number is 96%, and the only thing that my mind wants to do is chastise me for the 4% attachment I have to familiarity. Isn't that funny?
Right. And that 96 for you is
a complete redefinition, a willingness of a complete redefinition of my day to day.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. This is where it gets hard because. And when I go back to, this is where I'm going back to some of our first conversations, I think, about just who you are as a person, some of those first cards, what matters to you and the five words. Something I didn't raise at the time, but I feel it now as we look at this question. Is balance. Yeah? One of my guiding principles. Yeah, it's more of a principle. One of the guiding principles of my life, I think, for a very long time, was balance. And through my 20s, 30s, 40s. I would say it was easy to keep that balance, okay? And what do I mean by that? That there would be, that my professional life would be central in many ways. I never worried about that because everything we've discussed over the last week was somehow there, okay? I was in Brussels. I was in the capital of the European Union. I had the great fortune to be inside the European Commission, working there for 6 years. But then all the other jobs that I did around Brussels were in some guise, serving the European mission, okay? So the centrality of work was already in tune, I think, with what we're discussing now.
Can I add?
Yeah.
It was also within an institution.
Yes, absolutely, yes. For those 6 years, yes, mm-hmm. yes, mm-hmm. yes, absolutely.
Where it wasn't incumbent on you to do everything.
Far from it. You could not escape the fact of your own very small part within a large machine. Yeah, mm-hmm. that's mm-hmm. and that's part of what an institution is. You serve an institution. You are mm-hmm. one. You are a servant.
Yeah.
You are a servant within an institution.
Mm-hmm. But to illumify your vision and ignite it rests on you.
Yes.
Being able to engage and leaven and mobilize those
absolutely.
Who help you.
Absolutely. Yes. What we're talking about now feels very different. What else in my life? This sounds, when we say this, it sounds banal, but you know, certainly my 20s, 30s, the idea that work would need to be balanced with, and let me quickly mention the elephant in the room here. If I really rewind, we've talked a lot about family and friends, and that's in some ways that was an important moment in the first sense of the vision and the articulation of the vision, particularly when we talked about, you know, the need for each other. Those are the final words of the short version of the vision, the shorter articulation, our need for each other. And that was very much about friends and family and how we become our true selves through friends and family and then other relations in society. So from the beginning of my professional life, I didn't follow the path. I hope I'm being truthful to myself here. But I didn't follow the path of, and there's no sense of criticism here, it's just a personal choice, but I didn't follow the path of other people in other parts of Brussels or in other cities around Europe where work was so central that it would come to dominate my life. It certainly did at times, I know, but and that brings me back to balance, because I had this, and I don't know where this came from, certainly not from my parents, didn't come from there. My stepfather, my mother's second husband, was very much a workaholic, really was. In ways,
so the costs of that.
Endless. I couldn't begin to talk about the costs in this conversation. It would take too much time. So I definitely reacted against that. Mm-hmm. I think that answers the question, where did this come from, this need for balance? Mm-hmm. I think it was also my own questioning about what the good life might look like, and knowing that work simply could not. So why am I saying all of this? I think because at a relatively early age even as my professional career was taking off, I was attaching myself to this idea of balance, that there just had to be more. And so I think I was starting to really know as part of knowing myself that my love, you know, my love of music and literature and film, I didn't want to cast them off as things that belonged to my youth. I had a very clear sense of that these were vital to who I was, and I was not going to sacrifice them. Now,
you didn't put away your childhood toys.
Well, I perhaps didn't see them as childhood toys.
Exactly, because they weren't.
No,
but you know,
they weren't.
How we're told to put away our childhood toys.
Yes, and that I mean, we've dwelled a lot on music, just to take that example, or film, music and film, that I attach so much importance to these things that they were, they were entertaining at their best, of course. This is not an austere vision of what art is, or a moral vision. Great entertainment and fun and electricity, all of those things, but also a deep sense that these were, these things really mattered. So why am I saying this now? It's because as I look at the question, what difference would it make to your world? I can feel part of me, again, one of these little voices, alarms going off and say, okay, this idea of a balanced life, what does that mean today? If I fast forward to the present day, it means more than ever putting a lot of time into relationships and spending time with other people and building friendships. If you're in a new city where you don't know anybody, this is work. And I said to myself, probably in maybe even in the first year of our move to Copenhagen, certainly by the second year, yeah, this is work, but I'm going to do it. Yeah, seeing it as a project, because of my own view of what friendship is and how important it is.
Yeah, so necessary it is.
Yeah.
Too.
So again, the reason I'm saying this is perhaps as a way of answering the question is almost putting down the limits, if you like, or voicing the little alarm here, which says, okay, if you've got a vision and you believe in it, and it encompasses, yeah. So again, back to the wholeness, the integrity, it encompasses not just your vision of your political vision, your philosophical vision, but a vision of how to live your life as well. Then how would you do that and not let it consume you?
So I'm going to basic math for a moment.
Yeah.
If you look at what you are doing now, your life now, Jonathan, and then you add the vision to it, the realization of your vision to it, you're going to hit overload pretty quickly because you already have enough things, including friendships, that take some of your time.
Mm.
Yeah. And you value those things.
Yes.
So for a moment, just put on the hat of that museum curator once more.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And couple that with the fact that you see, as you've said, your path, your true path. So if you see your true path and you see all the things that you could possibly bring with you on that path, now if you curate and look with discernment, what's still relevant? What must I bring with me to be my whole self still?
Mm.
And what can I discard?
Yeah.
What is it that's been taking me off my path already these many years that has, is there a word, de-energized? Enervated you. Depleted and enervated you.
Sure, absolutely.
And then look closely at those things and see if there's still a value to you.
Yes.
To make room for.
Yes. Well, I think the answer here is, and how do I know this? If I look at the people I see in Copenhagen now, yeah, people around me, but it's not confined to Copenhagen. I've seen it before. Yeah, I'm not seeing this for the first time, but I see it afresh now in Copenhagen. I have also understood that people who have followed their vision, or who live to embody their vision, whatever it is. Have not necessarily sacrificed the most important things. They may have had to make very difficult decisions about usage of time. And I am clear in my own mind that, you do have to let certain things go. But again, this is not about time management. I think I said a few days ago in a different conversation that it's the search for efficiency is the wrong path. It's a mistake. Yeah. It leads you down the wrong path, because if you, the great example of this is emails. If you come up with a great system for organizing your emails and how you answer your emails, what will happen is you will receive more emails. So in other words, the efficiency will lead to a greater volume of emails in your inbox. So by the end of the week, you're being efficient has led you to successfully and brilliantly manage more emails. And I remember listening to the, I think, psychologist and writer who was who's recently written a book on this. His name escapes me, but it's the idea that also within an organization, you then would develop a reputation for being very organized and efficient, and people would send you more emails.
Load you more.
Yes, that's it. But that's it, isn't it?
Yes, it yeah. is.
So
we're actually penalized for being high performers in organizations, right?
So yeah. Oh, he'll
give it to Joey. He can do it.
Yeah, he always responds. That guy always responds. Yeah, yeah, yeah. He always gets back to me. Yeah.
I'll get an answer from that guy.
So let's go to that guy. Yeah. So the general point here is, and trying to sort of wheel this back to the discussion so that it's not. Because I don't think we're having this card is not about time management and how you can, you know, what does your
thank you for that
what does your vision mean for your day? But there is an important point here about priority and value, and this would have to, you know, coming back to the question, what difference would it make to your world? In what ways will your world feel the impact of this significant change?
And look at the words there, of this significant change when realized.
Yes.
Not the doing of it, but the actual significant change.
Yeah. Beyond what we've just been talking about.
You're understandably focused on the doing of it, making space for it. You've made the commitment, now how do I do it?
Yes.
This is saying, how will your world feel the impact of this significant change? Not of going on that journey till it's realized, but actually once it's occurred. And it is doable. How you do it here isn't the question.
No.
It's a fait accompli. How will it impact your world? It is important, though, Jonathan, that you see in it first what you see in it to get to the crux of it.
Yeah. I'm wondering here if there's not the mirror image. When we talked about how would the world feel once the vision has arrived, so afterwards.
Yeah.
And it felt very good in that conversation to talk about feeling, because I think the question was, how would it feel?
Yeah.
And
if your vision were realized.
Yes. Yeah. And so we talked about...
what difference would it make? We've asked all of those questions.
And that people would...
Why does it matter?
People would feel... We said people would feel less lonely. People would feel less anxious. As a measure of the new... Yeah, as a measure of the change. I have to say here that I think in my own soul, a sense of it's truth again, isn't it? It's not the sense of any completion or certainty. Is there not something here around?
I have a promise.
Promise in the sense of
not the commitment you make to someone or someone makes to you, but rather you feel promise. In the world, there is promise of a better day, for example.
Yes.
So that jumps over hope because there's evidence.
Because now you've realized together, you've made it an actuality that you have that shared home together with all of, again, it's... I'll call them conditions of satisfaction, respect, etc. You've created that together. So what could be which you saw only as a you knew was a possibility, and maybe you knew you know beyond that, it's not more than possible. It is a reality because you see it. Now it is a reality. So you have fulfilled the promise. It has fulfilled its promise of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so departing from this world one day.
Yeah, that's sort of where I was going as I listened to you there. I remember in our first discussions about the visionary, and this is before we got to any articulation of my particular vision, that the role of part of the role of the visionary is not to walk away. The visionary doesn't walk away at any moment, really. She will, we know this, she will die at some point. How much of the vision is realized? Do we know that? We don't know that, do we? Really? But
we do know that however much of that vision is realized, any vision is better than what was, because the reason for the vision was you could see what would be better, what difference would be better, and why.
Yeah.
That serves the greater interest, not oneself.
Yes. Yeah.
So if you were to achieve this, as you will, and leave the world, as Catherine said, we've been talking a lot about death, but regardless, many years hence, whatever it may be, when you leave the world and you can look back at what you've left behind, what difference would it have made to your world?
Yeah, I mean, and this is why I think the first word I planted here was integrity, wholeness. I'm coming back to that. I'm seeing a sense that ultimately I was true to the vision that I'd seen.
Which is your truth anyways, yeah?
Yes.
You've said as your truth.
Yes.
It's who you are.
Yes. So you sometimes, Marianne talked about accountability, yeah, your own accountability towards yourself. The sense that you have been true to
There's a difference between accountability and responsibility. So yes, accountable to yourself in this case for fulfilling the responsibilities of the role you agreed to take on.
Yes.
You've done your job.
Yes.
You've done what you promised to do.
There's a word that is landing here, and which I'm pushing away because it doesn't feel right, and that's peace of mind.
What about just peace? To be at peace with yourself.
Yes. That I do like.
And of your life.
Yeah.
With your life.
That does feel right, because again, I was searching for that mirror image of the vision itself and what the vision encapsulates. So if in that new world, people feel less lonely, feel less anxious, feel that they belong. Yeah. I think we said that as well.
And made a difference.
People yes.
People want to know they contributed.
Absolutely. Yes. Yes, 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 yes.
In a way that is select, is distinct, distinctly meaningful to you.
Yes.
And so is that the sign of a meaningful life, when you've achieved something tremendously meaningful to you and others that makes a huge difference? Huge being a relative term.
I like the word meaningful there. Because there was a point in our conversations where we rightly, and again, this is the marriage. This is the marriage between the vision and then how it expresses itself in the life of the individual, which we're constantly trying to make this bridge between the two. Mm-hmm. The sense of a good life is not measured by a list of achievements in the sense of I did this, I did that. It's this truth. This is what I was trying to get back to earlier. The truth, the integrity, that you had a vision of what the good life was. You had a clear sense of what the good life was. And at some point in your life, you stepped onto that path.
You found the path.
Yeah. And that it was a singular path that excluded all others. In all of these fundamental ways.
Even when you are on the path, if the path were a 6-lane highway, and you see all the exits you could take, you choose not to.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Even when one leads to a beach, imagine that, sunshine.
Sure.
Wealth, whatever might be appealing, desirous in some people, you choose to stay the path.
Mm. Yes.
Because at the end of that is something much more significant, more meaningful to you than an afternoon on the beach.
Yes. Yes, you've pointed me to something here, which is where through this choice you've made, you know, this significant change, so the impact of this significant change, which is both the vision itself and what the vision means, but also your own personal choice to embody that vision. In some way you are, and this is important because I think it leads to acceptance. In some way you are establishing your own measure of value. That does not mean that you are I'm not sure that any human can create an entirely personal system of self-evaluation, self-worth, self-esteem. It's just not possible. It would require a level of isolation from the world that just doesn't make sense. But there is peace here in, and I think this is part of my struggle, not now in this conversation, but through life, which is, if we feel the need for affirmation from other people, which at its first breath can feel normal and natural, the need for, I remember asking myself, well, where else does self-esteem come from? It comes from others, isn't it? We need to feel that we've made that contribution and that people value us. And I sometimes thought that was an important part of leadership, that you had to make sure that people felt, if they had, this was part of leadership and why it was important to recognize people's efforts, not just a pat on the back, but a proper conversation about why that person matters. Somebody said to me once about this, be careful with that idea. Be careful with that idea, because you need to find confidence and self-esteem within you. You need to feel it within you. If you rely on others to give you that sense of affirmation. You know, what are you, I'm posing it as a question now, what are you hostage to? And then is there not a risk that you become needy towards other people, that you need the affirmation? So there is danger there. Even if, as I say this, I realize it's, I think it's the most natural, it's also the most natural human thing to want affirmation from other people. How could it be wrong? But I think what we're trying to get to here is the sense that you, through your choice, through your vision, through your decision to pursue that vision, that you have established a sense of peace within you, where, and this is where it does sound a bit selfish, but where you don't need the affirmation of others. You knew it was the right thing to do. You knew you needed to do it, and why you knew why it mattered. You knew why it mattered. You articulated it. You pursued it. And so you were true to it. You were true to your vision, and that brings me back to this idea of integrity that started, that was there at the beginning. That all of that together folds in on itself again and means that you can't feel lonely. It's there's a privacy to this, that the intimacy between the person and their vision, which is vital to all of this. That loneliness, again, here we go, another paradox. That loneliness that is necessary at some point in the vision, when it's just you with the vision, mm-hmm. Yeah? Mm-hmm. In the same way that when you write, it's just you and the pen and the empty sheet of paper. And you get beyond that, but there is loneliness there. So coming back to the question, what difference would it make to your world? It's you are at one here with the world, which again comes back to integrity, wholeness, and truth.
Does it get better than that?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe not. I'm struggling to imagine what would feel better than that.
What would feel better than that?
Yeah.
Thank you, Jonathan.
No, thank you.
Jonathan begins answering this question by looking at the difference his vision would make in his own life. He started with how his day-to-day life would change, how he'd cope with the unfamiliarity, and whether or not he could still live a balanced life. And that's completely understandable in anyone about to lead a significant change. However, we're now in the amplify stage of Illumify, where it's essential that leaders make the visions that matter to them also matter to those who can help them realize it. When he looks through that lens, Jonathan sees that they could feel promise in the world again, the promise of a better day. If that were offered to you, would you be willing to help realize it? And the leader's own reward? A sense of peace within, being at one with the world, wholeness, integrity, and truth. The leader's journey continues. Stay tuned. I'm Marianne Gobet. Thank you for accompanying us on the leader's journey. To fully experience the passage to igniting meaningful change, subscribe to the Illumify Game Changer podcast. To learn more about the Illumify Game Changer and how to embark on your own leader's journey, please visit Illumify's website at illumifyinstitute.com. You matter. Step up. Speak up. Together, let's ignite meaningful change.